Welcome, everyone, to another level of the Kabbalah of Forgiveness, my commentary on Rabbi Moshe Cordovero's amazing Tomer Dvora, a 16th century classic of Kabbalistic Musar, that deals, if you've been following along, this is kind of redundant, but it deals with 13 different levels of mercy in the first chapter, which is what we're focused on in these videos. So, by way of preamble, I have to tell you that this is the fifth level, and I know I'm going to regret putting this on YouTube because I am sure that at some point I'll have some crosswords with my children and they are going to pull out this video and they are going to say, "Hey, Abba, check it out." They'll hold up their little phone and they'll say, "Isn't this you here? Isn't this you talking to me about this?" So I'm sure I'm going to regret it, but let me go through it anyways, and maybe I'll watch it myself again sometimes to remind myself. Anyways, this level I've called Release the Anger, and it refers to a quality of God's forgiveness that is completely counterintuitive. The prophet Zechariah meditates on the metaphor of God, or the simile of God as a shepherd. And he says that God has two different staffs. I guess they're really one staff, but they're used in two different ways. One is the staff of Noam, of pleasantness, and the other one is the staff of Chovlim, which means literally woundings, like harm. And God uses one or other of these staffs, or the same staff, I guess, in two different ways, all for the benefit of his flock. Meaning, there are times when God uses the staff of pleasantness, saying, "Here, look, I'm going to split the sea for you. You won't even get wet. You can go straight through." And other times he uses the staff of woundings. If the people are not behaving appropriately, then he will chastise them. But what's discussed in this fifth level of mercy is the fact that God decides when to use which staff, and God's decision may be entirely counterintuitive. In fact, God, unlike human beings, is not limited by kind of cost-benefit analysis, and certainly not by emotional responses, even though the Bible does ascribe emotion to God in an anthropomorphic sense, and many of the medieval commentators have discussed what that means. But if we use the language of humanity, the Lashon B'nai Adam, as the Talmud will have it, there's a beautiful verse in the prophet Habakkuk that describes this phenomenon. It says there, referring to God, "Berogez rachem tizkor." In his anger, he remembers mercy. And that, in three pithy Hebrew words, is really what we're trying to do here. When we are angry, we have to remember mercy. And we have to say, "Wait a second, I'm really angry right now, but if I can see through the film that is covering my eyes as a result of this rage, maybe I'll see that pulling out the staff of wounding is not going to help the situation, and maybe I should do the opposite. Maybe I should use the path of pleasantness, and that will ultimately have a more beneficial result." That's really what's going on in the fifth level of forgiveness. It is an analysis of what goes on in our heads at the time that we're angry with another person, and it asks us, the Rabbi Cordovero asks us, to remember mercy at those points and try and find an alternative strategy. This is certainly something that happens in family dynamic all the times, at least as far as my experience has been. Because, you know, when you have the same people in your life and you deal with them frequently, you tend to fall into certain behavior patterns and certain communication patterns. And anger can be a bad habit. Anger can just be something that happens as a result of, you know, a series of communications that happen in the same way over an extended period of time, and it always results in anger. So the goal here with the fifth level of mercy to say, "Wait a second, I'm falling into this repetitive and unhelpful behavior pattern. I'm going to see through it, and I'm going to release my anger and maybe pick up the other staff, the staff of pleasantness." So here's an example of how that might work from my neighborhood here in South Florida. You know, we live very close to the ocean, and one of the things that they always warn people about are these things called rip currents, sometimes called rip tides. And these are like strange sort of undertows of water that, you know, you can be swimming fairly close to shore, and then all of a sudden you'll be gripped in this terrifying, powerful current of water that will suck you out hundreds of yards out to sea, past the safety buoys and things like that. And, you know, there's a risk of drowning, and it's frightening to be pulled out so far. So if you try to fight against it, if you turn yourself around and try to swim against that current going all the way back to the shore, there's a danger that you could become exhausted, because the current is way more powerful than you are, and you'll become exhausted, and God forbid, you could drown. So therefore, the advice is, and it's relatively simple, is don't fight the current. Instead of trying to swim against it back to shore, turn yourself 90 degrees and swim perpendicular to the current. Don't try and swim backwards in the intuitively correct direction back to shore. Instead, turn yourself around consciously and swim alongside the shore until eventually you get past that point where the current is sucking you out, and then the water is calm again, and in fact the water will be flowing back into the shore, so you'll be able to swim back to shore easily. So let's take that metaphor and think about what's going on in a family dynamic or with a coworker or something like that. You find yourself pulled out. You know, you're really angry about something, and the first thing you want to do is lash out, and you want to say something nasty, and you want to give a speech and things like that. But, you know, you've done this 100 times before, and nothing has changed. And in fact, it might even be getting gradually worse every time. So therefore, take a look around and maybe swim in a perpendicular direction. Try a different tack altogether that does not, you know, tap into that anger, and you may find that you'll be able to release your anger, and you may be able to forgive the other person as a result. So let's look at a pragmatic example from the home. So let's say, you know, you go out with your spouse for an evening, out to dinner or something, or a wedding, and when you get into the car, right away you realize the gas gauge is below empty and the light is on, and you're a rush to get to your reservations or the wedding or whatever it is, and you're upset because you let one of your teenage kids use the car the night before or during that day, and they never put any gas in the tank, and here you are, you're stuck, you're going to be late because of this. And this is only the 346th time that it's happened since the beginning of the year. So that was a little bit of an exaggeration. I hope it was funny. But anyways, so you come home that night, and there's your teenage son, and he's sitting on the sofa, and he's got that kind of like patented 16-year-old slouch, and you go up to him, and he basically, you know, he doesn't give you, doesn't refer to the fuel gauge or anything like that, and you get so angry just by seeing him relaxing like that when you were late as a result, that you decide, that's it, I'm going to give him the most memorable speech ever, and he is going to change, and this will never happen again. And you're just about to do this when you realize, wait a second, I gave this memorable speech a little while ago and nothing happened, and should I really be doing that? You remember Baroge's Rachem Tizkor. In anger, you remember mercy, and you say, wait a minute, let's try swimming perpendicular to the rip current here. And you say, you know what? I remember you did really well on that math midterm this week. So you know what? Let me give you $20 as a reward. I'm really pleased that you did well on that test. And all of a sudden, that gets your kid's attention. You can tell because he takes one of the earbuds out of his ear. And he says, gee, thanks, Abba. And then, you know, as he's accepting this unexpected kindness, because he's not stupid, he knew that the memorable speech was going to happen, he says, you know, by the way, I'm really sorry, I meant to tell you, but I forgot that I, you know, didn't put gas in the car when I used it this afternoon. And if you can do this, and it works out in this kind of, perfect way that I've described, utopian way that I've described, then maybe not only will you be able to engage in forgiveness, which is our task in these lectures, but at the same time, it may even improve the relationship overall. And it certainly caused your teenage son to engage with the idea that his behavior was not entirely appropriate, and maybe you can actually get some traction to create some lasting change. So that's the idea of the fifth level. You release the anger, look for another way to deal with the situation that does not involve anger, and hopefully that will help you forgive others around you. Okay, I hope you'll stay tuned for the sixth one, because the sixth is my absolute favorite of all 13. Okay? Thank you for watching.